Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio. Delivering the baby. Things are going on, boy.
No, I mean...
Catching his wife in one hand and the baby in the other, and he's Superman.
Nope. I can't do it. Can't do it, Jay.
Oh, I'm you're chewing.
I can't
Guys,
do it, though.
Vamp, I'm still chewing my food.
I mean, obviously, he took classes, he learned, he'd been through it before, whatever the case may be. But even so, though, man, I'm like, damn.
That's a lot.
It's just a lot.
That's a lot.
Because I'm scary as it is. I'm not doing anything that I just don't have confidence in.
When you first have a baby, when you have your first kid, you're almost scared to hold. Like, you're like, oh, I got to hold. Like, I want to.
Let me ask you a real question, both of you guys.
Yes.
Where were you positioned when you had your first child?
Same side of the sheet as.
Yep, me too. I was not.
No, I was not on the other side.
I did take a gander, and I.
No, I was not on the other side.
It changed. Changed a lot for me.
Can't unsee something.
I was like,
No, I helped do all that.
You were in there? Like,
yeah,
football?
Fine.
Yes, Keyshawn.
Red 7.
I'm fine. Keyshawn is a real man, Jay. Not like us. We're like, oh, this.
I'm like, do you need pads for your head? Are you hot?
No, but
what do you need?
I'm fine with that because I have people. It's almost like, you know, you say, I'm not getting in the ocean. I'll get in the ocean with trained people that know what the hell they doing.
Uh-huh.
I'll go down and get in there with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the doctors. I know that them dudes, they sitting over there, the glasses, they got the thing, they give me that over there.
Right, but you're by yourself, and all of a sudden the umbilical cord, there's a problem.
Well, you got to do it when you're by yourself. You have no other choice.
No.
He said his wife fell.
No, I'm a catcher.
And then the baby came out, and he caught the baby and his wife.
I'm going to catch her, put the pillow underneath, wherever I need to put it, head, legs, whatever. Just hold on. I'm going
to.
I'm 911-ing. I'm just, that's just me. And then I might pass out because I'm nervous. That sort of stuff, that becomes confrontational to me. I don't like conflict.
Well, see,
I really don't.
The part that really threw me off.
Wait,
is
it becomes confrontational.
Yes, because I can't handle that.
You'll be fine. You've been in more intense situations.
The
part that really caught me is when Smoots was talking about, because when my son came out, they umbilical
cord. Yeah, same. There was a danger
wrapped
of my
around
third one.
His neck.
That's what I'm saying.
And my doctor was like, boop, 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 just moved it around. But the fact that his wife had the instance just to move the umbilical cord around the baby's neck, that's mind-boggling to me.
Well, in that moment,
I get what y'all saying, but that to me is just, it's a lot. Now, all honesty, I probably would have figured it out.
Yes.
But it would have been a situation, put it this way, I would have been sweating a lot.
You had never had shaky hands until that moment.
As I said yesterday, when they got there, they would have thought I was the baby because I'd be in a fetal position trying to deliver.
Y'all
would have
been
all
right. Oh, y'all would have had to do what y'all had to do.
On the other side of the sheets. Man, stop, man. Y'all.
Yeah, that's right. Can we talk about some football? I don't know how much.
Like, what?
That
was a life shifting event.
I understand. I get it, Jay. We understand. Victoria's laughing. Our camera operator.
She's dying over there.
We all have more than one kid.
Yes.
Right. And this was his first kid,
this
right?
Is his second
kid.
So he's been
By the time you get to the second, you're like, all right.
And they had the natural birth before. So
right.
He,
so
that's what
yeah, they've been through.
He's
I was going to say, if it's the first one, it's different. I think you don't know what to expect.
And then the midwife and the doula helped them through the first one, so you feel like you know how things are going to go.
Now from there, let's talk about some football.
Red 7.
Let's criticize an NFL coach. Let's savage a team. The Giants, Joe Judge, head coach, said yesterday that, quote, the fish stinks from the head down. It starts with me and ends with me.
Mm-hmm.
He took the blame for their 1-5 record. Of course,
1-5.
Fish rots from the head down is usually how I say it. And it doesn't start and end with him. He's saying that, but actually there are people above him. One of them hired him. Evan, would you like to know where the expression comes from? Is that the idea? Evan, get on that mic.
Evan, where are you, Evan? Evan, 1, 2, 3.
Where
are you,
Evan? I want to know where the saying comes from.
We could Google it, I assume, because that's what happens, that a rotten fish
goes
rotten.
Let me get my Google fingers on it.
Rotten fish or Timmy Toughnuts?
I would say the.
I wanted to know where the saying "rotten where the fish from the head down" comes from, and I wanted to know from Key, who played for Bill Parr. Like, this sounds like a Parcells thing. Him saying,
well, it's not
this,
a,
like,
football expression. It's an expression generally. It's not just football.
Right, but there's a lot of expressions that are expressions in the world that we've used in football terms. I mean, I know like Parcells, like saying, well, if you want me to cook the meal, you got to let me shop for the groceries. That's right. A chef's saying, but Parcells used it in a football term.
I mean, so I imagine.
I want to know if from Key, who played for Bill Parcells, did you ever hear him saying this? Because to me, when I hear Joe Judge, I think he's kind of a wannabe Bill Parcells guy.
I've heard so much from Bill, man, and other coaches. I'm sure he said that before, but that's not one that sticks out. You know, getting into a fight with a pig. Don't get into a fight with a pig because he'll like it and he'll get mud all over you. I've heard,
yeah,
you know.
That's, I got it.
Because you get dirty and he likes it.
Yeah. That's Bill.
Early English examples credit the Turks. It dates back to at least the 1600s. It comes from the idea that after is the fish is caught and killed, it first begins to spoil at the head.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah, some fishmonger or fisherman.
So it's not Parcellian.
Observed that this was the case or thought it was.
What?
You didn't know that?
Yeah, I was just telling you where it shut up.
A fish rots from the head down is an expression.
You didn't know that the fish is no good at the head?
I use that expression all the time. It's a great one because it explains, like, when you see bad organizations and they're bad for 30
you
years.
You use fish, I use the snake head.
Right.
Yeah, you
cut the head off the snake. Yeah, yeah. But cutting the head off the snake is when you want to beat somebody or overcome something.
I understand. I just use that a lot.
Right, you are. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
In this case.
So now you just want me to say every term that I use a lot? Is that how you made it all work?
No, I just said I used that a lot. Max was saying how I use the fish.
Yeah, the fish. Because you notice certain organizations, like for so long the Knicks, were no good. And then you start to look, but all these different variables change.
It stinks at the top.
This, and then so I start to look at Dolan, right? Like, wait a minute, that's the owner of the team. Yeah. You know, inevitably, here, the Giants stinking predates Joe Judge, and it predates Gettleman. Jerry Reese, the second half of his tenure with the Giants, was awful. It was awful.
Well, okay, so every organization, I consider the Giants one of the big organizations in professional sports. Sure. I do, because they've won multiple championships, and it's all, you know, they're Monday Night Football, they're Sunday Night. It's big. They're Manning. It's huge. Parcells, whatever. They're going to go through a slump. Everybody can't stay great forever. It doesn't happen. The Yankees are struggling now, but the Yankees were good forever.
But the Yankees, but the difference is when the Yankees struggle, they're still in the playoffs. The Giants are really an up and down franchise. As much as they've won, they have a lot of valleys.
Yeah, but that's true. But teams have peaks and valleys, and teams. You look at the New England Patriots. They were rolling. They may struggle for the next 4 or 5 years, man. And they were rolling for 20. It just happens.
It happens to some.
And I think Joe Judge, in this situation, when Dan Orlovsky said what he said the other day of Timmy Toughnuts.
Let's listen to Orlovsky. Let's listen to Orlovsky. This is what Dan had to say.
Players in the locker room don't like Timmy Toughnut coaches when you're losing football games.
Timmy Toughnuts.
Timmy Toughnuts from Joe Judge.
Yeah.
And you're losing football games.
Yeah.
And your quarterback goes, everybody on your team is hurt. You're down 38-3 at half or at the end of the game. Your quarterback is still in the game with like 2 minutes to go, and he's taking shots when everybody on your team is hurt. Like, this is just a disappointment by the Giants. Okay,
here's the problem.
The best dad joke you ever told.
Can I just tell you, guys? I feel like I'm over all this stuff. We analyze, overanalyze, break down every single thing every single day. You know what? When you lose, things suck, and everything starts to be built against you. All I'm saying. Is Joe Judge has a style. It's very Bill Parcells or Bill Belichick type, but it takes a minute to create a culture. And I don't give a damn what anybody says. I played for a man that when you're down by a lot, it's still about what kind of effort you give. Now, I know pros may not want to hear that because everybody has their own style, but it is something about what kind of effort you bring each and every single day.
Know why that's significant? Because when an organization's been struggling, say, for a decade, like the Giants, then you bring in a new guy, you should have patience, but the fans just feel like I've been giving you patience. Even though it's not the new regime that has gotten the patience, they just got there. Fans feel like I've been giving this franchise patience for a decade now. So they have a shorter leash for the new guy. Is this team going in the right direction?
You know, Dan is right 100% of the time, and he's right in this one.
He's right 100% of the time?
I'm just giving him a little nugget.
Oh, okay.
He's listening.
Okay.
He's right in this situation. When you are a coach that everything is, I want to be tough, I'm talking a certain way, I'm treating players a certain way, I'm cutting guys, when you're doing stuff like that, you got to win.
Running them to, running guys into the ground in practice.
You got to win. The reason it works for guys like a Parcells, because Belichick is different than Bill. Everybody always says Bill, Belichick, and Parcells are the same. They're not. Parcells, let me tell you something about Bill. He'd get your attention real quick because he'd cut your ass, Max. You're good at what you do, right? You're good. You figure you're the guy with the 2 o'clock show and the whole deal.
Yeah.
He'd come in, have his press conference, do a little deal team meeting. Tell you to see him in his office, he cut you. And people will be like, damn, he cut Max. Yes, that's going to get the attention of the team and everybody else because we see you as invincible. We're like, oh, dang, Max is cool. He messed up a couple times. Gone. Now, all of a sudden, that tough stuff is real.
Because there are actual real-world consequences from the beginning.
Yes.
And everyone
just
feels like,
barking,
if that dude can get touched, I can get cut.
Barking to be barking, you're not going to get the team to respond to you. You got to show me some action now.
It's just like with kids. I swear, like,
go get me a dude.
You can
just whack.
You can talk tough. Exactly. You can talk tough to your kids, right? If they don't notice, I had to learn this.
Run
as
the
a
mommy.
if they don't notice that there's an actual consequence that you will stick to immediate and that you'll stick to, they will take it for granted that they can get away with it.
I remember when Bill first came, it was 97, and Bill said to us, we lost or whatever, we're losing, whatever. He came in our press conference, and he said, some of you guys, this isn't for you. And I'm sitting there right there. I say, well, he ain't talking to me. I'm just saying to myself. He goes, if some of you guys ain't going to be here, I know I'm going to be here. And I say, yeah, he's serious. Man, dude cut like two people the next day that should have been on the team, still with us throughout the year. That was contributors. But because he didn't like some of the things that they had done over the last couple weeks in the games, he said they're not taking him down. And that's how you have to be if you Joe Judge. You got to go to Gettleman and say, I know we drafted this guy, or I know we paid this guy a lot of money that came in. Think about Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll brought in Matt Flynn, drafted Russell Wilson, paid him a bunch of money. Max said, I can't win with this dude.
Yeah, don't throw bad money after good, or good money after bad. I always get that expression wrong. Fish rots from the head down. Kayshawn, I did it again.
See, here we
– because I'm looking at Jay – well, let me just tell you. When I call it the Dr. Pipper Twitter feed – or Kayshawn, it's because I'm combining the first two words. Kayshawn, Jay, Will, and Max, is presented by Progressive Insurance, protecting small businesses with specialized coverages for commercial vehicles. More at progressive.com.
I'm looking at Jay, and I'm thinking.
First down and goal. Keenum takes the snap. He's going to throw. He's throwing for Stanton. Touchdown! Left corner of the end zone!
They got him open. They schemed it.
27 seconds left to go in the third quarter, and we can all breathe a little bit.
All right. Aaron Goldhammer from ESPN 850 in Cleveland joins us. Aaron Goldhammer is brought to you by Erich Smoked Sausage, the Eckrich Smoked Sausage. As I said, the real MVP of any tailgate. Pick it up at your local grocer. Good morning, Aaron.
Guys, it's the first time a Jew has ever been brought to you by a sausage on a radio show. I'm very impressed.
Well, look at that. What do you make of the Case Keenum situation leading the Browns to the win?
I think Case Keenum is a professional backup quarterback, and he did last night exactly what everybody in Cleveland expected him to do. But if you guys want to play this up like there's some kind of quarterback competition or controversy in Cleveland, I mean, a healthy Baker Mayfield is head and shoulders better than Case Keenum. But you'd rather play Case Keenum than a one-armed Baker Mayfield, which is what you got right now.
Yeah, and so you look at what happened last night with Case Keenum underneath the center. How was the fans' reaction inside the stadium overall?
The fans were a little on edge, I think, before kickoff. Everybody was getting the message on their phone that Baker had this additional injury leading into the start of the game. So I was with a bunch of fans as that was happening, and everybody just sort of had this glazed look on their face. And then they did this really cool lights-off introduction thing at the stadium that got the fans really juiced. It's a night game. There's been 8 hours of drinking leading up to kickoff. And there was a lot of buzz in that stadium by the time Keenum took his first snap. And that was a great move by Kevin Stefanski to take the ball last night. And in five plays, the Browns went the length of the field and scored a touchdown. And at that point, everybody was just focused on winning that one game. And their minds sort of went away from this, who's our quarterback going to be for the rest of the season conversation.
Aaron, are you one of the people that get bothered by the fact that Baker revealed exactly what his injury was? Like, do you look deeper into that?
Jay, it's a good question. And I believe that there is a little bit of a divide right now between Baker and the Browns over that specific issue. I don't think the Browns wanted that out there. And I certainly don't think they wanted it out there 45 minutes before kickoff of a must-win primetime game for them. But I think Baker's agenda and his representation's agenda is a little bit different. They want everybody to know just how injured he is, so that it doesn't affect this ongoing contract negotiation that he has with the team. And I thought it was kind of awkward last night, is the best way I could describe it. Stefanski was asked about it after the game, and he was sort of tiptoeing around it. The Browns do not want to acknowledge that this broken bone exists. But, you know, Baker said it plain and simple to Fox Sports, so there you go, right? I mean, there's really no getting around that.
Yeah, coaches, as you know, Goldie, coaches, they don't want you to be locker room lawyers. Leave that up to them to deal with those situations. And I was one that, much like the Browns organization, I don't want to hear about your injury, man. Just tell me you're getting better. Just tell me you're rehabbing. Just tell me you're looking forward to coming back. And that's pretty much it. I think that was a mistake by Baker and his camp. And you mentioned contract negotiations. Will there be strong contract negotiations as the season we're on, or will they just wait it all the way out?
I think that this thing is going to go into next offseason, because at this point, you know, with this injury, and the season has a long way to go. You know, we're only, we're only seven games into this thing. But I think that what's likely is that we're going to go into next offseason, and that there's a chance that Baker could even enter the final season of his contract without an extension done. The Browns have to be practical about this. If they could get a good deal done with Baker for a reasonable amount of money, I think we know what he is, guys. I don't think that he's a top five quarterback in the league, but I think he's a quarterback that you can win with, which means the $40 million is off the table. But not every quarterback is going to sign the largest contract in NFL history when they sign an extension. Baker is good. He's not fantastic. His bust will never be in Canton. But that's not the question. The question is, can you win? Can you win a Super Bowl with him? And so I'm wondering if they're going to have that negotiation this offseason, depending on how this goes. I think it also depends on, does Baker take another snap this year or not? Because I'm not convinced that he's going to play another down of football. He's got a broken arm, guys. I don't know how you play through that.
Well, you said the question is if they can win a, can they win a Super Bowl with him? Can they win a Super Bowl without him is the question.
Well, yeah, I find it hard to believe that you can win a Super Bowl with Case Keenum. I'm not totally ruling it out. Case is a professional backup quarterback, one of the best backup quarterbacks in the league. You can beat the schlumpy Broncos, you know, on a Thursday night with Case Keenum. But can you go into Baltimore and win with Case Keenum? I think that's a little harder to do.
1,000%, Goldie. Exactly. Do you expect OBJ to be traded by the deadline? What do you think the team is going to do with him?
I don't, because I don't think the Browns could get anything back for him. I mean, literally right now, I'm not sure they could get a sixth or seventh round pick. Number one, I think Odell is hurt. Again, he's got this shoulder injury, AC joint in his shoulder. Number two, he's just really not playing well right now, and that's on him. You know, he dropped two or three balls last night and was not a major factor in the game whatsoever. I will credit him for gutting through the injury and being tough, and he's a factor in the sense that whenever he's on the field, the defense has to respect him.
Yeah.
But as far as I can remember, like, I don't think he's made a play really all year. So I don't know what kind of team is going to sign up to give even a fourth or fifth round draft pick for a guy who it's week seven, he's hurt, and you're still waiting for him to make a play. So I think the Browns probably ride it out to the end of the year. But I will make you a guarantee. This is going to be Odell Beckham's last season as a Cleveland Brown.
Why do you think that? Is it has anything to do with $20 million a year between him and Landry?
Yeah.
You got to pick and choose.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to deal with Baker Mayfield economically. So do you cut him at the end of the year and just cut your losses, or you try and trade for him for a pack of gum and a carton of cigarettes?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. If the Browns could get anything for him, I think they'd trade him. But otherwise, I think you'll see him leave. He'll be released and leave in free agency. And I just think the Browns have three or four receivers right now that are playing better than Odell, in the sense that they've made plays this year and he hasn't. That narrative can change. There are 10 games to go. But I think we've seen enough since Odell got here, guys. He's just not the same player anymore.
Keyshawn?
And that's where I'm at with it. I mean, I just think all these injuries, right, they take a toll. This isn't a shot at Odell. This isn't some kind of hot take. I just think we've seen about 4 or 5 years of him not being the same guy that he was in 2016.
Keyshawn, J. Willimax, ESPN Radio. That's Aaron Goldhammer on the Goodyear Hotline. Aaron, you mentioned earlier we were talking about Case Keenum. Case Keenum, in fact, in 2017, when Stefanski was his quarterback's coach, had the second highest QBR in the NFL behind only Tom Brady. And so there, I'm sure some people in Cleveland are thinking about that. Some of the fans have to be. Ear to the ground. How, like, taking the pulse of the town, as far as you can tell, what's the sense about all of this? Because for Baker to make sure everyone knows, no, the bone is broken, even if the team doesn't want it out there, that's sort of a PR campaign, right? How is the town reacting to all this?
Cleveland loves Baker Mayfield. It is. I'm not allowed to say anything bad about him on the show without getting screamed at. I mean, the guy has about a 98% approval rating amongst the fans. So that there is this notion that there's a quarterback controversy here. No, I think everybody pretty much agrees. Like, healthy Baker is better than Case Keenum right now. I mean, if Case Keenum takes the Browns to the Super Bowl, we can litigate this again. But I don't expect that to happen. And I expect Baker Mayfield to definitely 99% be the starter when the Browns open training camp in 2022. But the season's got a long way to go. But right now, we're not going to get one phone call of somebody saying they think Case Keenum's a better option for the Browns than a healthy Baker would be. It's just healthy Baker isn't the reality right now. Broken-armed Baker is. And I don't want to play, one-armed quarterback.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. Adam Goldhammer, we appreciate it. Thanks for jumping on with us.
Aaron Rodgers on line two.
Tune in.
Thanks, guys.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
A huge win for the Raiders. How about the focus from that Vegas team? Given everything that happened this week, new head coach to go on the road and win as convincingly as they did.
I think it speaks volumes about the players in that locker room.
One of the best club beats of all time. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests on the Goodyear Hotline.
But that's what they used to do in the club, dancing, right? We like sweating.
It's like a Zumba class.
No, you weren't in New York when this song was out. This is before you got to New York, right? You had to still be in high school. Yeah, because you and me are basically the same age. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
High school music.
90s, right?
Yeah,
early 90s.
Late 80s, early 90s.
Early 90s. Yeah, early
90s. My 89, 90, 91, something like that, right?
Yeah. I was like 9, 10, yeah. I love the way you both look at me like,
because you act like you like 12.
What do you mean? I was like 9 or 10 years old when the song came out.
David, I get it.
Joseph?
No, I don't mind. I didn't try to hide my name.
My name is Jason David Williams. Yes. David is my father's name.
David is my son's middle name.
It's in our family.
Well, why do you call Key Joseph?
Because that's his first name.
Right, okay. So
my government name.
What I'm saying is Jay is pointing out that you're calling him by his middle name. He's actually calling you by your first name.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Oh, okay.
But he never disclosed.
Why do I need? I don't need to disclose anything.
Full disclosure, Jay.
Full disclosure.
Full disclosure.
Because he already know JD, he doesn't want to be called JD.
JD.
People
JD.
The worst person.
JD.
He is the bigger brother that you have that just always doing something slick.
Yeah.
Just always messing with you. People don't, if you don't know that about Key, he's always next level.
Hey, how's Jay Wee?
Jay Weezy.
How's Jay Will doing? Oh, you mean David? Oh, he's doing great.
JD? I realized this yesterday with Key. He is an SNL character for the entire show. He can do anyone from the show. He can mess with anyone from the show. He is an SNL character for the entire Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max show.
Do Max. What's your Max Kellerman? Oh, this is good.
Like, what do you mean?
Like, Evan just said you can do anybody from the show, mess with me. What's your Max Kellerman? I look forward to this.
Yeah, me too. What's it going to be?
Actually, I never said that. I never ever said that. I actually no. Here's what it is. I'm telling you that one thing that's for sure is that the Josh Jacobs thing. No, absolutely.
You guys can't see.
Danny Jones is for sure. In 1968.
There are these moments where Max will hit the talk back button, and him and Evan will go on like a 10-minute argument.
Or he'll
and Ken are just like, "Oh, here y'all go again."
1968. Stop. The Yankees actually, if I remember,
it's not a play-in game. It's not a play-in game. Right? If you want to be technical about it,
it's true. Evan might be onto something. How do you follow that? All right, we are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests joined on the Goodyear Hotline. The Raiders got a big win.
Yes.
So I'm just going to go right into it.
Yes.
No segue. The Raiders got a big win after John Gruden resigned as head coach.
Really?
I was not surprised by that, mainly because everybody said glowing things about Bisaccia. Usually there's someone you could find. Everyone seemed to really like the guy, think he could coach, right? The football heads would be like, oh, he can coach. And everyone people seem to like him. But so it was more than just about the execution on the field. Listen to Josh Jacobs, of course, star running back for the Raiders on the first game with Bisaccia as head coach.
The sideline was just it wasn't no anxiety, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was weird. It was like everybody was calm. You ain't have somebody cussing at you or going crazy at the refs, you know what I'm saying? None of that. It was just like, okay, something bad happened. He was like, okay, I'm not harping on you. He was like, all right, next play. And I feel like the guys, we all kind of motivated each other. You see a lot of defensive guys standing up, offensive guys jumping off the bench when the defense making plays and stuff. And I was like, that's the right type of energy that we needed.
See, for me, you know, I hate talking about this right now, right, Max? Because it's like, what did you expect, right? I said this when Gruden was let go or resigned or whatever you want to call it. I told him, I said, what do you think is going to happen? I said, man, they're going to rally behind Coach Bisaccia. Not only that, they're going to feel like they're not in jail anymore. And if you've never been to jail, you don't understand the feeling. Everything is taken away from you. You have nothing. You got to answer everything you do. Hey, can I go to the restroom? Hey, is it time to eat? And that's the way you feel when you're dealing with Coach Gruden. And Jacobs is speaking to it differently than I am. I'm being more real and blunt about the situation. And clearly, when the whole situation took place and they rolled out Josh Jacobs at to answer the questions from the press, you knew right then and there, Jay Stu's a young man. He's not going to tell you how he really feels. Now that Coach Gruden is out of the building, he doesn't have to worry about it. He's really letting you know. The stress level, the anxiety, all of the things that go on, you cannot perform at the highest level on a team when you stand on the sideline and everything is chaotic. Coaching, cussing, frowning up at everything, telling you you did wrong, won't admit his mistakes. You can't perform that way. Just can't.
Yeah. This one for me is a little bit tough. And I hear what you're saying, Key, but the Raiders have gotten better over the time that he was there.
So, yeah, Jay?
No, I hear – Jay? I look.
100% they've gotten better. I don't mean to cut you off, but I'm not going to let you do this.
But you didn't even know where I was going.
No, I'm just saying, you could sense that stress in that when you're watching them, it's a stress case. It just is.
I played for coaches that are stress cases. I played for people that are intense, that curse, that have an environment. I played for a coach in Lawrence Frank with the New Jersey Nets for a short stint of time where he micromanaged the detail on everything and was intense, and it made me robotic. It didn't allow me to just be fluid and play. But there are different formulas to winning games, right? And I think that's important to also note. I hear exactly what Josh Jacobs is saying. I agree with him. I want to see how it pans out over a larger sample size to see if that continues to increase that direction. But there are different ways you can win.
Yeah, a coach maybe guys didn't love, and now they seem to like their coach. They will respond. And the latest on Ben Simmons from the game's best insider.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.
Ben Simmons' agent, Rich Paul, he has told the Sixers that Ben Simmons is not mentally ready to play yet.
So for the first time in Joel Embiid's career, you're telling me they did a team bonding experience on the road where he actually got a chance to say, oh, it feels like this is my team now and we can kick it? That speaks volumes.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio. Yesterday, Adrian Wojnarowski tweeted, All-Star guard Ben Simmons is expected to come early to the 76ers shoot-around on Friday morning to discuss his playing status with organizational leadership, sources told Woj. The Sixers play the Nets at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Team still hopeful that Simmons will participate in shoot-around today. So for even more on this situation, we bring in Adrian Wojnarowski, ESPN senior NBA insider. What's up, Woj?
Morning, guys.
What's up, Woj?
Good morning to you. Okay, let's just start with the obvious. What's the latest, Ben Simmons and the Sixers?
Well, we know what happened yesterday. He showed up at the facility. He took his COVID test. He told several staffers that he had some tightness in his back. They did some treatment on it. The medical staff cleared him for his individual workout yesterday. He did not do an individual workout. He left the facility, so... You know, it's kind of like the same cycle. And then Philadelphia's front office, and they get on the phone with Rich Paul, Ben Simmons' agent, and they sort of have the same conversation they've been having for weeks now, really months in a lot of ways. And so there's a game tonight against the Nets. There's a shoot-around this morning. And the expectation is that Ben Simmons was going to come in, and they were going to talk more about what the next step is. But the one thing that the Sixers have been consistent with, and I think they're going to continue to be consistent with, is they're going to push Ben Simmons to be on the court every single day. They're going to continue to fine him if he doesn't play in games. Obviously, that's a big number for each game, about $360,000. And, you know, there's individual team fines throughout for missing meetings, workouts, film sessions, whatever. And so that's how the Sixers, in their minds, can try to keep some leverage on this. What they don't want to do is to allow Ben Simmons to leave the team, maybe perhaps like John Wall has in Houston, and just wait on a trade. That's not the scenario they want. They want him on the court. And again, this is will continue to drag out because they're nowhere near a trade anywhere in the league for him.
Well, one of my sources told me that, you know, Ben Simmons also got fined for not taping his ankles. So how would the 76ers handle things like back tightness or things like sore shoulders or my ankles? Like, how does that work if those are some of the things that Ben says is his reason why he can't perform?
Well, you know, you have a medical staff. And yesterday, back tightness, medical staff cleared him. You know, we know there are mechanisms where you can bring in, you know, league doctors for more, you know, for perhaps more for injuries that would be extending a longer stretch. And, you know, that's where, you know, listen, there's mechanisms in the collective bargaining agreement to work through those issues. But I think the Sixers' stance, and I think the league office's stance, is based on the collective bargaining agreement, you know, you have to render services. You have to have, you know, legitimate injuries to be paid for not playing. And so, you know, we'll see how far you know, that cat and mouse game goes with the Sixers, but it's been clear really since Ben Simmons came back on October 11th that he is not that interested in ramping up to play. And he got thrown out of a practice earlier this week. He's not gone through a full workout yet with the Sixers. And, you know, like Daryl Morey said yesterday, their two pathways are to get him playing well and to have him try to help this team win, or trade him for the kind of player that will. And anything in between, which is Ben Simmons sitting out or trading Ben Simmons, as Daryl Morey said, for role players, You know, that's not a road the Sixers want to go down.
Woj, what are you hearing about his status for tonight's opener and how they even could handle the building, bringing him in the building and the booing and just all of the negativity that will surround this young man as well as the team?
Well, I think it's very unlikely he's going to play tonight. Again, they haven't gotten him on the court yet for a full practice. What they had hoped would happen was yesterday, which was a team day off for the Sixers. They had won the night before in New Orleans. He was doing an individual workout, I believe, with Sam Cassell, Sixers assistant, that they would have seen him in that workout yesterday. They could have seen him today in shoot-around and then perhaps make a judgment on playing tonight. But, listen, if he's going to play again, Keyshawn, at some point, he's got to come in that arena. He's got to face those fans. He's got to get in the locker room with his teammates. And that's part of the reality of being on a, you know, having 4 years left on your contract, you know, nearly $150 million left. It is not going to be pleasant for him in that arena. And I think so far, you know, I don't know that we're that close to seeing him back in the arena playing in a game, but that's what the Sixers would like to see happen.
So, Woj, one of the things that kind of I got it yesterday because it felt like posturing. Maybe it was him talking to other general managers or owners of the league and also stamping his position down on how he felt about Ben Simmons. But when Daryl Morey went on radio and said, you know, I'm not going to get only role players in return for a guy like Ben Simmons, you know, what kind of trades have been out there? Has there been anything presented? And where did you think – what situation does that put – the Philadelphia 76ers in with other franchises?
Well, you know, the kind of deals that Philly's been presented are sort of what you get when, you know, typically it's a small market team trading a player to a big market, which is usually the direction this is going. This is unique in that it is a big market team that's talking to a lot of small market teams about a player going in the other direction. But what does a small market team who's rebuilding usually want? Young player and a bunch of draft picks, or young players and draft picks, some combination. Well, that's not what the Sixers want. They want players who can help them win now, or a key player who can help them win now. Now, if you want to give draft picks in a deal, great. But this is a team, because they're trying to win in Joel Embiid's window and they've got Tobias Harris and a group they do, that kind of package doesn't interest them. And so that's what makes this trade scenario so interesting, that it's really different than anything we've seen. And so I think teams who want to trade for Ben Simmons, typically, they're trying to add him to a team. Let's say young teams who haven't made the playoffs yet or on the brink. Let's say a Cleveland, a San Antonio who's trying to get back to the postseason, a Sacramento. Go through the league. Teams that are on the playoff fringe, they're really good young players. Philly probably looks at and says, that's not good enough to plug into our team. And the really good teams who want Ben Simmons, well, they want to add him to their core. And so their core of best players. They don't want to trade you their best player or maybe even their second best player for him. So that leaves the Sixers in a position where they just can't find the kind of deal that makes sense to trade for Ben Simmons. And they're better off just holding on to him and going through this, which is a very uncomfortable for the organization, for the players in the locker room, the fans. But again, we're only one game into the regular season. And while it feels like this has gone on for quite a long time, you know, there's a long way to go for them to try to see if they can find some value.
Mm. Excellent stuff as always, Woj. Thank you, of course, for jumping on with us. That is Adrian Wojnarowski, ladies and gentlemen, host of the Woj Pod and our senior NBA insider. We're going to hear from a Philadelphia star in a matter of moments, who says there's only one way to resolve
coming on with us.
The Ben Simmons situation. Only one way. What way could that be? And which star could I be talking about?
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.